Life Audio.
Today on Talk About That, John threatens someone with a loaded broccoli and tells us why not to look a gift horse in the mouth. Meanwhile, I learn about redundant colons and give my review of the newly restyled Cracker Barrel. Plus a conversation about success and happiness and why they're not usually the same thing. Today's episode is not sponsored by your favorite sports team. We're going to absolutely ruin most of your weekends. But first, a word from our actual sponsor.
Hello, folks. My name is Derek Greer, and I'm reaching out to fellow pastors and church leaders just like you to join me and other Christian leaders and organizations throughout the nation as we come together on June 8th and 9th for National Unity Weekend. Together, we will show the love of Jesus as we serve our communities on Saturday, June 8th, and then preach from a shared text on Sunday, June 9th. To register, go to unityweekend.com. That's unityweekend.com to join us as we unite the church and unite the nation.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
It's sunshine in the banter town. Johnny, let's talk about that.
It's lovely out.
It's very nice today. And we just finished, what was it, the blueberry winter, the dogwood?
What is that? It's a false spring that happens?
Yeah, it was a false winter in the middle of spring.
No, it's false spring because it makes you think it's spring and it's like, aha, no not spring.
That's
not
what called, they call it.
It's false spring,
that's why
right?
They call it blackberry winter, not blackberry spring.
But it's not false winter because that would be like... Yeah, it is winter. It's in the middle of spring. It's not a false winter.
We're in spring, yeah. And it gets cold again, and you want to call that a false spring? Because you think it's not.
Let me put it in wrestling terms. Okay.
Obviously, that's what you should
it's
do.
It's a false finish. Like, the Undertaker gives you the Tombstone Piledriver. You go, it's over. And then Hulk Hogan kicks out. That's a false finish. It's not really the finish of the match. So We think it's spring. Oh, yay. Finally, it's here. No, here comes winter again. Boom.
Yeah.
Kicking out of the Tombstone Piledriver.
But they call it dogwood winter.
Then there's a Indian summer, right? That's when it's...
Yeah. Gets hot in the middle of the...
Right.
Anyway, it was cold and now it's hot. I think, Johnny, that's really the takeaway. That's our show.
We're not meteorologists.
No.
We don't have Doppler or anything cool like
that. We don't study meteors.
What is Doppler anyway? Remember? It's a kind of radar?
It is a kind of radar.
I remember that was the big deal when you got Doppler. Mm. We've talked about that before, about when your local weather person had to be put out to pasture because they'd bring in somebody with an actual degree, not just somebody that like licks their finger and holds it up to the air. You know, be like, it looks good to me. Back to you, Ken. They actually had to get a scientist,
My hip hurts. Yeah. Probably a storm blowing in.
This knee is aching. It's probably going to rain. That was your weather person.
You know they use Doppler for medical scans and stuff now, too.
You just had some medical scans. You want to talk about your results? You were pretty braggadocious during lunch.
It wasn't a scan. It was some blood tests.
You had some blood tests. You're like... They said, I'm bordering on superhero.
I think it was kind of like, I think the exact words they used were invincible. And I was like,
they said, you gave us the blood of a 22-year-old.
which I don't know what that is.
I don't need either, but yeah.
I do have high cholesterol, as we know. If you're a fan of the show, I mean, it's a common
or
constant.
I'm a fan of high cholesterol.
Either one. If you're a fan of high cholesterol, then
that's odd.
You should start supporting me.
That's a strange.
Because I have inherited, Johnny, familial.
Right. A lot of. We're going to talk about that in This Week in History. So stay tuned for that, about how like you can, there's certain things you can't really get away from even if you get in great shape. You have heredity things that are going to be risk factors for you.
Wow.
And so you might, you've always been a leaner person than I am, but I've never had cholesterol issues, and you had like the highest in the county.
Yeah.
Well, like Rick, our buddy Rick Roberts, comedian Rick Roberts, as he said, I get to go to regionals next week.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, but I did. I'm on a different regimen.
Of drugs?
No. Yes.
Because I started to say, you're not your diet's not going to help, right? You had to go.
They say the diet won't help, which when they say that,
right,
it really helps.
Oh, I see.
Because then you're like, oh, cool.
What do you mean, sawdust?
It wouldn't matter now.
Mueslix. Remember that Mueslix cereal that came out in the 90s, 80s and 90s? It was like Mueslix. And it looked like a bowl of wheat.
Yeah,
like they just ground up wheat and said, hey, you can figure this out.
You got this.
Your body can process this eventually.
Right.
You're like, do you add anything? No. Eat it. Not even milk. Horrifying.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm chewing it. It keeps getting bigger. I can't. It's growing. It's horrible.
Yeah. They have me on a higher dose of my statin.
Okay.
And then I'm taking a thing called, this is great, guys, for the listeners.
This is very old man podcast stuff.
This is a thing called, that a friend told us about, and it is a fish-based or fish oil-based pharmaceutical. So it's not like just fish oil pills.
Okay.
But it looks like fish oil pills, but it's an actual pharmaceutical. So they're doing other things to it. It's out of Israel, I think. And it's called Vascepa or Vascepa. And it's like,
okay,
supposed to be really good for you. And so I've been on that.
So you're saying, are doing things to the fish when it's alive to make it secrete this?
No, I just think that they're
adding to fish oil.
Right. They're using fish oil as some sort of foundational.
They're like taking these fish and modifying them some way.
The fish.
Hey, before we.
They're releasing fish into your bloodstream.
Before we extract this oil from you, come into this room for a second. We want to have a talk. And they zap them with some kind of rays.
They make sure they find only the most intelligent fish.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? There's a whole screening process.
I'm not
for
sure
it.
About the fish oil thing because it. First of all, you burp fish all day.
Well, that's why I take it right before bed.
That way you wake up.
No, I don't ever taste it then.
Give us a kiss. That's horrible.
You know, in the movies, when someone comes over and just starts kissing in the morning, Laura and I always look at each other like, mm-mm.
Yeah.
Like, that is not real life.
Like, there was an article I read today that was like a listicle, and it was like things that Hollywood won't stop doing, like tropes. And one of them was, you know, you're watching a sitcom when everyone is sitting on the same side of the table. And it's true.
Yeah.
Like they're sitting, you can tell they're setting up a camera shot and it kind of takes you out of the show. You're like, well, that's not how people sit.
Yeah.
Even like the Last Supper painting.
Right.
Think about it. Nobody's got their back to the
shot.
What do
they call that? The invisible wall or the invisible.
The fourth wall, whatever it is. The invisible man.
It's got to be your.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's like they're facing and it's like.
Yeah.
Imagine how long the disciples had to hold that pose.
Exactly.
For this guy to paint. Whew. My goodness.
Anyway, but fish oil. So, but you're in good health now.
Everything was in normal numbers. It is one of those, as an Enneagram 6, it's a real like.
Yeah.
I go.
You want to sell? You want to celebrate?
Well,
today you had, what did you eat? You ate something that you don't normally eat.
I ate a steak.
You had a steak at lunch.
My morning was a little stressful.
This was a stress eat?
It was. Oh, yeah. I'm just going to sit and be.
You were medicating with food?
So the waiters and waitresses know me there real well because you and I are there a lot.
Uh-huh.
And among other people I meet there.
So she was trying to go.
I have other friends.
She was trying. No, you don't. It's fine. No, she was trying to do the whole, like, the usual, buddy. And you were like, hit me with
not today.
I need.
You bring me something.
Bring me a pound of meat.
And bleeding.
Yeah.
And she brought me some dude that she beat up in the bar.
That's
I was
weird.
Like, that's strange. Yeah. That's not what I meant. I'm in a steak. But it was funny. She goes, okay, you want unsweet tea, you know, with lemons? Yeah, yeah. She was like, okay, are you going with the wings today or are you going with the sirloins? I was like, no. And then she's like, well, I saw that you were eating bread. Like, this is how well they know me.
She knows your patterns.
They're paying attention to whether I eat bread or not when we sit down.
They're in the kitchen taking bets on it.
Hey, he's eating bread today. What's happening? Yeah, it was real. I was like, wow.
John's off the wagon. Money's changing hands. They're throwing it down like it's a stock market. They're throwing down little pieces of paper. Are you kidding me? Bread? He's a fool. Oh, his numbers were good? Okay, fine. He's had normal statins and normal whatever.
Yeah. I just take an extra Lipitor now if I have a big meal. Just like, you know what?
Absolutely.
Actually, kids, don't do that.
No, don't take
too Lipitor. Totally joke. Don't do that. So, but yeah, it was good. You know, and then I ordered. She actually is like, you just want the loaded broccoli? Because that's the thing I do.
Yeah. You put broccoli and you put it stuff on it like a baked potato.
Yeah. And it's cheese, a great keto
butter,
dish. Yes.
Cheese, butter, bacon.
Yes.
And sour cream.
Sour cream.
And Pez.
And
the candies.
Just like your potatoes. And you barely even miss the potato.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Barely miss the potato.
It's like a true keto dish. And I've ordered it there so many times now, they know what it is. At first, anytime I get a new one, I'm like, a new person, I'm like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
I have to sound like a fool describing this. Now, look, I want you to take some broccoli, and I want you to load it up.
Yeah.
And they're like, what? Broccoli?
Load up that broccoli. When you say load it up, it's just funny to me. It's like, what are you? You go, you know. And they're like, load it up.
I tell them, like a potato.
Yeah.
And then they go, oh, you mean butter it? And they do the thing you just did. I'll go, the people in the kitchen
But the potato's cut open to hold all of that stuff. Broccoli's just like, you mean dump all this on top of it?
Like a pile.
That's not loading. There's no crevices for it to all.
Do you need a crevice to? You could dump stuff on top of a potato.
I'm saying it's not being loaded. Loading is like loading a gun, like a musket. Like
you
the
know
potato
what? You
is
and
the
your
musket.
Politics. You stick with the potatoes.
You take my broccoli from my cold dead hand.
We have an open potato carry here in Tennessee. People can carry potatoes anywhere they want.
Well, yeah, and somebody said they were coming over to the table. They were like, be careful. That broccoli's loaded. So he's not afraid to use it. Once you eat broccoli, you are loaded because that is some... There's some intestinal discomfort that can come from broccoli.
Wow.
I don't love it.
It doesn't do anything to me.
We won't get it. Really?
No.
I think your family's just being too nice.
Johnny, if you see my numbers, then you know why.
That's true.
My body is functioning
like a finely tuned
Swiss watch.
So Curry had, we're getting ready to lose Curry's health insurance because she's switching jobs. She's going to be, because my wife is a caregiver and she's transitioning out of that job after 10 years, which is amazing. My wife is a saint. She's an angel. And so it's a big kind of emotional thing. But beyond that, we have to make some decisions about health insurance. So she's going to like Cobra her health insurance, which is the best possible plan.
Yes. You want to spend
You mean to pay like the most for it? Okay. Just for how long? Okay. Forever? Okay. So we're doing that. But in the meantime, I'm like, since we're getting ready to switch off this insurance, you need to get all your tests done. So she's done all the monthlies and the yearlies and all the things. And so she got a colonoscopy scheduled, so we go in for the colonoscopy. She did the prep, and it's a disaster. You know, it's a horrible day that you have to take and like drink all this stuff.
Right.
So I was off. Luckily, I was home for all of it.
Well,
so she can't eat, and I'm like, should I eat? I'm trying to be supportive,
right?
But I'm also like,
you just start drinking the stuff with her.
I did.
Okay.
I was like, halvesies. We just start chugging it. No, but so she did all that. So she did all the right things. She didn't, you know, she didn't ruin the test. And there's a literally like when you go in for the test, there's a thing at the water fountain as you walk in that says, stop. If you have testing today, do not drink water.
Oh, wow.
They're like literally warning people because people are like, did all the right things. Let me just have a big sip of water before I go in for this because you can ruin the test. So anyway, we go in. And the reason I'm telling you the story is not to go into weird colon stuff, but my wife's colon was normal.
Okay.
It was healthy.
That's.
But. There's like these papers that they give you that describe the test, you know, and they get pictures like a snapshot of each, you know, 1 through 8. And this is this section of it. And it's a map of your colon and your small and large intestine. And you go, oh, this is where the camera traveled. And then there's like these things that the doctor's written notes, they're typed out. And it said colon. What did it say? Colon was long and redundant.
Oh.
That was how my wife's colon was described medically. And it was such a funny.
I think that the first time I heard this, someone immediately said, oh, like John's sermons.
It was your wife that said it. Because Curry said, my colon is normal, but it was described as long and redundant. And then Laura's like, just like John's sermons.
Am I right? got me.
Anyway, it turns out, because I thought, well, does that mean like, are there sections of it are all the same as the other? Because that would be redundant, you know, meaning they're similar.
Right.
That's not what it means. Redundant in this, because we looked it up. It means she's super curvy. Like she has extra lengths of colon that are kind of jammed into her body. And so there's extra curves for it all to fit. And it's not a problem, but it can affect like whatever motility, or it can affect you being more likely to be constipated or whatever. We're getting into really the weeds of old man stuff, but
you went way.
But older. In other words, the camera has to kind of like weave its way around.
Yeah.
And but my wife's colon's redundant.
That's.
But if they said it's not a problem, really, it's healthy. But
I feel like that's.
I was like, is there some of the are there places we can donate some of her colon to? Like,
hey,
can you take some of these?
What is that getting on the black market?
Take some
right
of these,
now?
The colon superhighway. Can you take it down to like a normal size colon? And you don't need to like, what is it? I don't know. Is it like, is there a locks of love for colon people? You know what I'm saying? Because if there is, I mean, I'm just saying, my wife's got a little extra colon.
Yeah. I'm just saying, guys, if you want to email us.
If there's somebody out there would say like a semicolon, she could take you to full colon. We don't know a lot about medical stuff.
To be clear.
This is not a medical podcast.
Did they use a Doppler radar on it? That's the main question.
No, they didn't.
They did not.
They used a tiny, tiny camera.
Yeah. Yeah.
They do a thing now where you swallow a pill that's a camera to go in to do, and I don't know how that all works. And I'm sure that's a really expensive. It's probably not covered by her current insurance.
You know, guys, you're about to hear some ads, and I wonder if it's going to pick up on, like, I wonder if it'll be like a ColorGuard ad.
Oh, that'd be, like, not ColorGuard, ColaGuard.
ColaGuard is what I said. ColorGuard.
ColorGuard's like, the thing. You're the flag person at your school. Isn't that ColorGuard?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm just curious. So email us if the ad is aligned. We'd like to hear about that because that's always amusing to us.
Yeah. It's happened a few times.
It has. Let's take a moment to hear a word from a few of our sponsors.
Hello, folks. My name is Derek Greer, and I'm reaching out to fellow pastors and church leaders just like you to join me and other Christian leaders and organizations throughout the nation as we come together on June 8th and 9th for National Unity Weekend. Together, we will show the love of Jesus as we serve our communities on Saturday, June 8th, and then preach from a shared text on Sunday, June 9th. To register, go to unityweekend.com. That's unityweekend.com to join us as we unite the church and unite the nation.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Probably time to switch gears.
No, let's stay. Stay with colon.
See how long we can.
Yeah. Isn't that kind of a semicolon when you switch gears in the middle of a sentence, right? Isn't that how it works?
I use a semicolon, yes, when I want to say two things within the one sentence, but they're separate, like, clauses.
Why couldn't you just use a period there? Just make it two different sentences.
I would say something like.
Would that be wrong?
No. You can make it two different sentences.
I think people who use semicolons are kind of showing off that they know how they work. Or they're really wrong and they don't know how they work and you just look like an idiot.
Well, it is subjective.
I'm terrified of them is what I guess I'm saying.
I can never forgive them
never,
for what they
I
did.
I would never use it.
I would say like, Johnny's terrified of semicolon. Mm-hmm. He's an idiot, period. You know what I'm saying? So okay. I need those two clauses. They're related.
But you could technically
put a
period there.
I could just say
there.
Johnny's terrified of semicolons, period. He's an idiot, exclamation point. But it'd be better to me if there as a reason for it.
What about this?
Being an idiot can stand alone, you know?
It has for years. What about this? John is super condescending, divided sign. I'm not sure if I just used that correctly.
Divided sign?
Yeah, you know, like a little...
Like
the
a dash?
Yeah, the little, no, divide, but it's like a, like you would use in math. Like, that's what I would put there. It's like a colon with a slash through it. It's a colon and a hyphen all together. Yeah,
there's no division signs in.
I think you're wrong.
Listen, today.
I just invented grammar.
Today, I was talking to an English teacher, and we were talking about my daughter, and I almost dropped the joke like, well, you know, my daughter's good in English. She's almost fluent. I almost did it. But yeah. I thought, do they hear that a lot? Probably not. But I was afraid they wouldn't laugh.
Yeah.
And we were in a, you know, like a group of people. I thought, if I try this, it doesn't go over well. I just look like them.
Yeah.
The idiot. Exclamation point.
Divided sign.
Divided sign.
Percent.
Hey, Johnny, you know what I think is about that time.
Oh, is it?
I think it's time.
Is it time for quote of the week?
It is. Quote of the week, a little segment we call They Talked About That. Couldn't go back. My bass note wouldn't go low.
Yeah,
enough.
Come on, man.
Sorry. Johnny, today, Dale Carnegie.
How to Win Friends and Influence People?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought it was interesting. He said, success is getting what you want. Happiness is wanting what you get.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of those like reverse. If you open the door will open for you. If you doubt your powers, you give power to your doubts.
Yeah.
If you have enemies, you'll be your own worst enemy. I don't know. But it's...
Daddy sang bass moment. sang tenor.
So I'll read these and I'll go, ah, okay, I see what you're doing there.
Yeah.
But I think this one's really deep. Like, I think that there's a truth there. Success is getting what you want. Happiness is wanting what you get. I think I would say I don't know if I have a division sign between success and happiness now.
Yeah.
And happiness is a real 20th century word.
Sure.
Like, I don't, well, that's not true. The pursuit of happiness was in the, you know, Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, but do you think it's changed as far as like what?
It's an Enlightenment word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's a real, like, my grandfather, who's a preacher, used to say, what exactly does happy mean? Like, he would say that a lot in his sermons. Like, we're all, like, the whole highest goal of everything we're trying to do now is to be happy. And can anybody really define that? And here's...
You can define it in other people, I find. That's what you do. You go, I bet John's happy. Because you're looking at circumstances. And you're saying to yourself, I would be happy if I had that person's problems.
Yeah.
Instead of my own problems. Like, I would trade with them. I bet he's happy. But you never sits down and thinks, you know what?
I'm happy. Yeah.
It's always mad. It's always accusatory. Are you happy now? It's more like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost always spoken in scarcity context. You're right.
Yeah.
And it's a very like, we're doing some gratitude. I'm trying to do more gratitude in my life because it really, it's like taking a pill. Like I feel so different when I take time.
Yeah, you told me this, that you started writing down or praying and saying, literally counting your blessings.
Yeah,
like we were always told to do.
I'm gonna make sure I do 10 if I can. You know? Like today we were riding the car and me and Laura and Sadie all did 3 apiece in a round.
Yeah.
And
that's 9, John.
Correct.
You didn't get to 10.
Well, I added 1 at the end.
Oh.
It wasn't to get to 10. I just had one more I wanted to say. But
was I the 10th? Be real.
Guys.
I was 1 through 8,
you know,
probably.
What we forgot? I can't believe it. It was so funny, though, because I was, you know, I have a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, I want to really, you know, if you guys are open for it, I'd love to take a second. And we had a drive this morning. So it was like, you know, we have time.
Yeah.
So we have time. But to really, you know, kind of allow ourselves. And she goes, just stop talking so slow and let's just start doing it. And I said, I'm talking slow on purpose. Like, this is what this is for.
We're being contemplative.
We have to slow down. Like, that. If you can't rush through gratitude and it work, you know. And it really was amazing, you know, and everybody said thoughtful things. But I had this thought. I was doing it last night on a run, and I thought about my wife. This is God's honest truth. I thought about my wife. I was talking to God about her. And I had, like, this moment of almost guilt because... my wife is such a blessing to me. For a second, I was able to remember, okay, the just magnitude of the blessing of our marriage. And I was like, God, I really shouldn't be complaining about anything else because I have what everybody in this world says in all the songs or whatever they want the most.
Yeah.
Like I have that plus, like I have intelligent, capable, compassionate, helpful, brilliant,
I think meant plus like another wife. I have that
plus this other wife.
I mean, what else? Come on.
But I was like, I just thought of if you can't be happy with that.
Yeah.
Like we always find things to complain about.
Yeah.
Or something that brings us in the scarcity because it's human nature.
Well, it's like health too. Like there was a video that I watched today and it's Jimmy Carr, who's a comedian. And he was on a podcast and he's being kind of more philosophical. And he said this thing he was meditating on, which was, 30 years from now, you would trade all of your worldly possessions and all your money to be as healthy as you are right now.
Wow.
There's not a, literally, you can't know in the moment how lucky you really are.
Yeah.
And to be alive in this time, he said, life has never been, he goes, but we get bored by it. Like, it's so good that we forget.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're numb to it. You know, we forget that people died, you know, how many people, more people died in childbirth, the child mortality rate, all the things like things are, he said, things have never been more objectively better and subjectively worse. But it's because we are so aware we're not aware of how it's ramped up.
Yeah.
There's so many things that are better.
Well, I was reading in a book about the humanity's negativity bias.
Yeah.
And the particular scientist or sociologist or researcher was saying that some of the research points to it being a survival thing.
Uh-huh.
That you avoid, if you see woods, they might be pretty, but people, you know, thousands of years ago would go, well, I know there's a bear in the woods.
Right.
Let's go a different way. So they would avoid what was good out of fear of what might be bad, and that within us, then there's this constant, of course, I believe this is a part of our fallen nature above all else, that your brain takes in negative easier than it takes in positive. Positive is harder. And I had that talk, you know, with Sadie, and we'll talk about it in a volleyball context. Like, it will always be easy to find what's wrong.
Yeah.
It just is. It's just going to be easy for all of us. There's some of those natural, you know, positive people, but they get real disillusioned at some point in life, usually. Mm-hmm. But most people, it's just really easy to find what's wrong, but you have to search for what's good. When you search for it, it won't be hard to find.
Yeah.
But searching for it's hard to do.
Sitting down to search or like starting the search. Yeah. Yeah. It's like somebody said that about writing the other day too. John Acuff, who we know, he said, it's not writing that it's hard for me now. It's sitting down to write. Like, that's the hardest part. Making yourself sit down to write and then like getting into the groove of it.
Oh, yeah.
Make yourself push through. And I think that's true of like trying to find the good in your partner, trying to find the good in the world. And it's brave. Honestly, that's what you're really trying to hit at is like, it's so much easier to look for the bad. And you'll even be applauded for finding the bad and being a critic of society.
Yeah.
Because it's just easy to do. And it's like, we'll all gang up. Yeah, things are worse. And it's like, there's a lot of bad things. But like, I just don't know that I want to hang around with that person all day. And I definitely don't want to be that person.
Yeah.
I want to figure out a way to like, didn't you talk about that today at lunch about how like hope is like you keep, even if something goes bad, you keep looking for the next good thing to happen.
Yeah. My definition of hope is
hope. You might be blindsided by something bad.
Right.
But you're still going to look, well, the next thing.
Hope is looking for the good that is to come.
Yeah.
Right. So faith is believing that good exists when you can't see it.
Right.
Specifically in a religious context, believing that, you know, God's grace for you exists or whatever, his goodness for you. Faith is believing good exists that you can't see, but hope is looking for the good to come around the corner. And that if you walk, you know, we talk about the Pilgrim's Credo, a lot, you know, I'm not in control. I'm not in a hurry. I walk in faith and hope.
Yeah.
I greet everyone with peace. I bring back only what God gives me. And the one, for whatever reason, because all those are pretty profound to me, the one that always just resonates with me is I walk in faith and hope, because it is like a, you know, a declaratory statement of when I don't know what to do or how to feel, I remember this is who I have said I am. And this is who God says that I am. I'm a person that walks, because I have found myself hopeless on situations and you feel foolish hoping. And I think that's the big thing. Hope feels foolish.
Yeah. And we're afraid of looking like a fool after the fact. I believed and this thing didn't work out. And you feel like, but it's weird. It's like, I would never look at a person that hoped. You're harder on yourself. I would never look at a person that hoped and been like, what an idiot.
Yeah.
They believed in this thing that was going to happen and it fell apart. You'd have empathy for that person, but we're always afraid that the world's not going to have empathy for us for believing in something.
Yeah. I don't know if it's the world. For me, it's like one of my therapy things is, you know, avoidable pain is like, it drives me crazy. I could have done something different and this would be different. I think that's what it is for me more than it is looking foolish to others. This was avoidable. This was foolish. I should have known better. So when I find something, when I've been hoping or wishing for something or going after something and it just blows up in my face and doesn't stop you, well, that was wasted time, wasted energy. I should have known better.
Yeah.
I think that's where it goes. But when you go, hey, I walk in faith and hope, that is, then you remove it from circumstances.
Yeah.
You're saying, look, whatever happens, when I don't know what to do next or however I feel, I'm going to grab this. What I'm going to choose to do is believe that God is good, because he's proven that to me. I might not be able to see that very easily in my situation, but that's already been proven to me, right? So I can hold to that. And then two, that's kind of what to believe. But what to do, hope is an action. Like, I'm going to look for the good that is to come. And it has really helped me out of a lot of mental sort of holes lately in the last few months. Like, oh, that's right. I'll be low. I'll be like, oh, that's right. I walk in hope. So I need to, it's okay that there's bad.
Yeah.
I'm still, but it's okay still. It's not foolish to keep looking for the good to come.
Yeah, it's good. And I just, man, I think, yeah, the more hopeful people I meet, the more I feel like they're the courageous ones. And I want to be more like that. I'm really trying, John. And so hang in there. Stay with me, John. Don't give up on me, buddy.
I see. Hey, I keep looking for the good to come in all of us, bud.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it. John, it's time to go back.
Way back.
All the way back. By Ooh. The way, I didn't want to gloss over your quote. It was a great quote. What is it? Happiness is not...
Success is getting what you want. Happiness is wanting what you get.
And I think the prophet Mick Jagger said, you can't always get what you want, but if you find sometimes... Wait. If you try sometimes, you might find you get what you need.
There you go.
This is a different iteration.
It is.
Anyway, we're going to go all the way back now. This week in history, we call it Talk About Then. John, this week, 2005, the first video was uploaded to YouTube.
What?
It was titled Me at the Zoo. And it was shared by YouTube co-founder Jawad Karim at the San Diego Zoo. It can still be viewed at the YouTube site.
It feels late to me. I feel like YouTube was earlier than that.
No, 2005, man. We're in a golden age of distraction.
No kidding.
And YouTube helped us get there.
It's like Michael Scott said when he was confessing to the office.
He said, I didn't get anything done for 4 weeks or something.
When I discovered YouTube, I didn't work for 3 days straight.
Yeah. John, this week, 1985, Coca-Cola announced it is changing its 99-year formula, introducing what was to become known as New Coke. Less than 3 months later, due to public outcry and poor sales, they brought back the old formula under the name Coca-Cola Classic.
Yeah. If I remember, if you watched the Food That Built America, which does a Pepsi versus Coke things, yeah. there was a reason they did New Coke. They were trying, I believe, to make it sweeter to compete with Pepsi. And so when they made but we already had a Pepsi.
You know, it is true. And you know what's funny about, because somebody talked about the Pepsi Challenge the other day, the Pepsi Challenge where Pepsi did these commercials where people would drink like a little doctor's cup, the little Dixie cup of each blind taste test. Pepsi won like 8 out of 10 of those. Yep. And so Coke panics. We got to make our drink sweeter. That's why Pepsi's winning these challenges.
Yep.
They're going to clean our clock. But I'd never seen this before, but this was a meme that talked about when people were allowed to drink an entire glass, though, Coke won. Huh. Because Pepsi is so sweet, it overrides.
Come on, guys.
When you want to just savor something, when you want like 12 ounces of something, Coke would win 9 out of 10 then.
And isn't that just like our lives, though?
Yeah. You need to taste and see that the Coke was better.
If you overdo the sweetness of life, you underdo the classic goodness.
Yes.
I will say this about sort of bedrock companies changing what they do.
Yeah.
You know, Cracker Barrel did that, and there's an outcry right now in our area.
We were in Cracker Barrel last night talking about it because I really dug it.
I
like the new vibe because they had actual like bench seats with like padding. It's like you could sit in a booth almost, like a half booth, half table, which I like.
But then they get rid of cornbread?
Oh, they might have. I didn't notice
it. You're an old country store.
Yeah.
You can't like.
I didn't notice if the cornbread was gone, but they had biscuits and my normal breakfast. I get old timers breakfast. It was there.
You had breakfast for dinner?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's one of my favorites.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, John, I'm old.
That's the only thing I can make for Sadie when Laura was out of town when we were little.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, mom's gone again to work.
She wants an omelet?
Yeah. I was like, I'm making eggs again and bacon. Yeah. And so it was like our special thing. But
you're the best, worst dad ever.
It was because I don't know how to cook anything else. And I wasn't cooking that well.
Oh, boy.
Here we go.
John, by the way, so you're on board with people hating on Cracker Barrel?
You know
they don't do this stuff willy-nilly. They did research that said they're losing market share and they needed to do something. It's not like they were like, you know what we should do? Let's blow up this company.
I know that there's a reason for it.
Yeah.
But maybe you just need to stay the course. Where are the loyalists in this world? Is it all about the bottom line? Maybe you keep doing what you're doing and give your customers time to adjust to
inflation. You know they serve alcohol there too.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's another thing.
Well, they started serving beer like a couple years
ago. That's what I mean. So some people already had like, this place has become a singles bar now. Sodom and Gomorrah up in here.
When I was a kid.
And now they've taken all the pitchforks off the wall. Where am I? The Waldorf Astoria? This is way too snooty for me. I want to be in danger. I want a sickle hanging above my head while I eat gravy. That's the only way I can eat now. I need,
it was a good feeling.
I need an imminent threat hanging above my head while I enjoy my vittles.
A stiff breeze could decapitate me.
I need to literally be called vittles, or I can't eat them. Is it short? Is that short for vegetables? Vittles isn't just vegetables; it's just everything. Yeah. Vittles is everything.
Yeah.
I always thought it was like a weird abbreviation of vegetables. Vittles.
That's what you thought was weirder than reality. So, but Johnny, you've made a whole career out of that. So,
John, we talked about you can do all you want for your health, but sometimes it doesn't go as well as you think, just because of hereditary things. American author of The Complete Book of Running in 1977, which launched a huge running craze, Jim Fix was born this week, 1932. Died 1984 while jogging at age 43.
See that to backtrack to what I said earlier.
No, at age 35. I'm sorry. Wait. Fix started running and quit smoking at age 35 when he weighed 214 pounds. I don't love stories like this because that's what I weigh now. Don't you hate when you're somebody's before weight?
Yeah.
I know I'm 6'4 and everything, and right. I'm a healthy weight probably for me. I'm in a good weight.
You're doing great.
But I mean, when people go, I got over 200 pounds. I knew I had to make a change. And you go, good Lord, what?
I ate 200 pounds for breakfast.
I don't love the way you're talking here. Okay, so then he smoked 2 packs of cigarettes a day, and he quit. 10 years later, when his book, The Complete Book of Running, was published, he was 60 pounds lighter. The book sold over 1 million copies. It's believed he may have suffered a congenital heart defect as his father died of a heart attack at age 43.
That's like that guy from The Biggest Loser, who had the big heart attack, and he was like the healthiest guy around, but it was something congenital. And that goes back to be clear, my blood work was good, but I take zero, like, it's great.
Yeah.
But no confidence in that. Like, I still got to trust the Lord and keep doing tests, you know what I'm saying, on things, because, yeah.
Jim Fix lived, 1932 to 1984, so what was he? He was 62, so he wasn't young.
He was 52.
52. So he was 52, so that's not great.
No, 52 is not.
No.
But I will say 1 million books in 1977, that's a lot.
So you're saying it's worth that he lived only to 52, John, because he had 1 million books? Like, if I had 1 million books, you could take me tomorrow.
I'd be happy. I bet that guy. No, I'm just saying that's a lot of books to sell.
It is a lot of books. Jeez,
I read a thing.
It's always about book sales with you.
I got to read this to you real fast.
Okay.
Because this came... and it was fascinating to me.
I feel like I butchered the Jim Fix story. I was all over all over the map with details and facts.
It's okay. I'll
clean this up.
They're not listening still.
Jim Fix was 52. He did write a book about jogging. He did die while jogging, but his story was pretty fascinating, and he inspired the big jogging craze of the 70s with his book, which is overall good. It's just also he had a congenital heart defect that he didn't know about, and that's probably what killed him. But people wanted to say, like, you know, they want to blame his old life. Like, did he still have some? He smoked all those years. Did that
still
linger?
Residual?
Anyway, I don't know. Go ahead with your thing.
The name of the article is my friend Chris Martin. By the way, you guys should subscribe.
From Coldplay.
No,
different one.
He has a Substack, and it's really, really good. So look up Chris Martin. But he titled it "No One Buys Books." And actually, he was reposting by Ellie Griffin. So yeah, great work. He says to Ellie, but like literally. This is like from a court case in 2020.
Yeah.
In 2020, only 268 titles sold more than 100,000 copies. And 96% of books sold less than 1,000.
Wow.
In 2020. And the question was from the lawyer, I think they were in a litigation. Do you know approximately how many authors there are across the industry with 500,000 units or more during the 4-year period? My understanding is, answer is, it was about 50. 50 authors across the publishing industry who during this 4-year period sold more than 500,000 units a single year. Yes. I mean, that's crazy. Less than 58,000 titles published in a year discovered that 90% of them sold fewer than 2,000 and 50% sold less than a dozen.
Oh, no.
That's 50% less than a dozen.
That's like your family didn't buy copies.
I have taken this and flagged this on my email, and I'm just reading it every day.
Just
comfort.
Remind yourself.
I'm like, this is great. We're all failures.
Yeah.
And it's such
Doesn't
it
make you feel better?
It does.
If I can't win, I want everybody to fail.
I want everyone to
That's
lose.
Wonderful. What a wonderful attitude.
Yeah.
This hopeful new you, it's really shining
Guys,
through.
I walk in faith and hope and jealousy. It's right there in the Bible.
Faith, hope. But the greatest of these is jealousy.
It's jealousy.
John, a couple more. The only bachelor U.S. president was born this week, 1791. Do you remember who that would have been there?
Wait a second.
U.S. history here?
Born 1791?
Yeah. I'll give you a hint. His niece acted as first lady, I thought was an interesting footnote.
No, I know this. Hold on. Allison's going to kill me because she knows this because she knows everything about first ladies.
First nieces.
I want to say. No, I know this. Was it Monroe?
Buchanan.
Oh, Buchanan. I was going to say John Tyler next.
James Buchanan.
I'm sorry, Allison. I failed you.
He served from 1857 to 61. The only bachelor U.S. president. I wonder what that was like. I mean, it's a different time to be a bachelor. It's not like he was going to singles bars and stuff.
We don't know that.
That's true. We don't know.
That was a pretty...
It's a freewheeling time.
Yeah.
I doubt it.
Pretty... The president, by the way, those years, Buchanan left the country. Buchanan did nothing to lower the temperature very well for what was coming of the Civil War. Because, again, right after him, 1861, that's Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, right.
And secession, and the country splits over that election.
And so. You think it has something to do with him being a bachelor? You think if he had had a wife that he would have been more focused on unity and...
See my previous comments.
Holding things together?
It is my wife that keeps
me... He was not conflict-averse?
Maybe it's my wife that kept me from becoming president, because maybe I wouldn't be happy. You know what I'm saying? That's the only thing, though. Maybe she talked me out of it.
Yeah.
And we chose a simpler, more rustic life here in Tennessee.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just not presidential quality. Okay, go ahead.
Well, no one will ever know.
That's right. The world
These are sliding doors that we'll... the Trojan War started this week, 1184 B.C. The Greeks enter Troy hidden inside a giant wooden horse. Do you know a lot about the Trojan War? Is that a true story?
Yes. I believe that it is.
That's a wild story.
Yeah.
Hey, we got a gift for you.
Yeah.
And it's used, obviously, we use it as a metaphor for things being kind of like snuck into our lives. We think they're a gift and it's actually like, it ends up being a bad thing or it's somebody trying to do you harm.
Yeah, it's, we just got to double check this. No, wait, it's mythology.
Is it?
Let's go to Britannica.
It says the Greeks enter Troy, the Trojan War.
Greeks pretend to, you know, I don't know.
I think it's a real story.
I should know this.
The Trojan Horse.
The story is told at length in the book two, and is touched upon in the Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know.
That's
if
a
it's,
great question,
it's
guys.
Just like folklore.
Somebody's screaming here, and I understand. Listen, just because I study history doesn't mean I know everything about everything across
the world. We got a couple emails the last couple weeks about people screaming at their radios or their iPods. I'm even saying iPod. I'm sorry. I apologize. At their phones. If you want to send a note to the show, John, how would you do such a thing?
You would just email hello@talkaboutthatpodcast.com.
Or hello.
Hello.
Yeah, you're getting it wrong.
Yeah.
And we're open to that. That's fine. We take correction pretty well.
We read the tone of an email.
We read into the tone. Yeah, big time.
Exactly.
But we love getting, and we'd love if you want to become a patron, you can go to talkaboutthatpodcast.com. Click on the upper right-hand corner. That's how you get ad-free content for the show. We do appreciate our sponsors, but if you want ad-free content, that's the way to get it, and we appreciate our patrons. John, finally, this week, 1822, Ulysses S. Grant was born. And I did not know this about him. American politician, 18th U.S. president. He was commanding general for the Union Army during the Civil War. I knew all that. When entering West Point, his name was mistakenly written down as Ulysses S. Grant. They put an extra S in there, I guess.
Yep.
Ulysses. And which he began using that as his name. He insisted the S didn't stand for anything, which is fascinating to me because Harry S. Truman, same thing. The S didn't stand for anything with Harry S. Truman.
Wow.
We have two presidents that had just a weird mystery S.
Well, and Ulysses S. Grant, in particular, he traded on that for his entire military and political career because you know how they wrote his name in all the articles?
Yeah.
U.S. Grant.
U.S. Grant.
So, like, he became, U.S. Grant to the rescue.
Right. I mean, he's literally Americana.
That S served him so well in his career. Yeah.
Wow.
And he, was not one of the top, by the way, students at West Point. So
no.
Yeah, he was.
He couldn't even spell his own name. No, they wrote it down wrong.
When the Civil War began, he literally was not in the Army. That's what's crazy.
Wow.
He was out of the Army, and he was selling firewood.
when the St. Louis. When the next Civil War starts here, we will not have been in the Army either. So that's, we're going to be as prepared.
But he was a soldier before him, like the Mexican-American War and stuff. Oh, so. Okay. But that's it was a meteoric rise.
Do you know what his real name was, though? Not Ulysses S. Grant. Do you know what the real name was? I didn't know this.
His middle name?
His middle name was Ulysses.
Was it start with
a, you would never get it if I gave you 1,000 guesses.
Does it have it start with a G?
Starts with an H.
Horatio.
Hiram.
Oh, that's right.
Hiram Ulysses Grant, which, hug.
Hello?
Why not let that be your U.S. Forget U.S. Grant. How about a hug, America?
Instead of fighting each other.
How about a hug? You've been at war? Hey.
Hey.
Who wants to hug it out?
Come on.
Elect Hiram Ulysses Grant.
How about a second term? What do you say? Bring it in.
Bring it in for the real thing.
Oh, by the way, Oxford University classicist Dr. Armand de Angour says archaeological evidence shows that Troy was indeed burned down, but the wooden horse is an imaginative fable. Perhaps inspired by the way ancient siege engines were clothed with damp horse hides to stop them from being set alight.
Okay.
That's a hard sentence he just wrote.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, sorry about that. It's not real.
Man.
They don't think it was real.
But we can draw a lot of like moral tales from it that help us advance our culture, right?
Is that what we're literalism. Saying? If someone ever brings a huge wooden horse and is like, hey, got a delivery, just don't take it. Don't sign.
No.
Don't sign.
Don't.
And if you have huge gates to your city, don't open them.
Is that what look a gift horse in the mouth comes from?
No.
Because there's people on either side of the gift horse?
No, a gift horse in the mouth is whenever they would be... that's what you examine on a horse for their health, the main thing.
Oh, I see.
So if someone's giving you something, it's rude for you to go look at its mouth and make sure it's a quality horse. Like, just take the gift.
Right.
Yeah.
So you should look a wooden horse in the mouth and be like, what's going on in there?
That's right. Look in there and see if you see people.
Yeah, with swords and such.
Right. Right.
Wow, we learned so much today.
It was a very educational
episode.
We're
not generally an educational podcast. No. We learned about redundant colons,
oh,
gift horses, John's blood test, so much.
Guys, you should check out Johnny's website, johnnywjonnie.com.
Tour dates going up on the daily.
The dude's everywhere.
I'm roaming the countryside.
So you leave today or tomorrow for what, California?
California, and then I'm going from California to Maryland.
Right.
Middle of the weekend, I'd take my first red-eye. I'm taking a literal red-eye flight.
What time?
11:59 p.m.
Ooh.
I'll fly overnight just to get, because I can't get to my show any other way. There's nowhere that gets me in. Hey. You lose all that time in the air.
Hey, listen.
Hey.
I have one of those inflatable neck pillows.
I'm going to need it because my brother and I, we talk about it. We don't want to buy one in the airport because they're $1,000.
Yeah.
We need to get one at like Big Lots now.
Or just you have Amazon can have it here by tomorrow probably.
Or I could just borrow yours.
Okay.
You have an inflatable one?
I think it's in my backpack.
Okay.
I carry it.
It's not like they're that cumbersome. You can put it in your backpack. I mean, you don't have to deflate it all the way down.
Yeah, deflate it, put it in a little bag.
You go... You got to blow it up each time you want to.
Look, I got tired the other day, and I rarely lay down in my office, but I was just having a rough one.
You use the neck pillow in your office?
And I just blew it up and laid down on the neck pillow.
This is the saddest scene to walk in on.
Right underneath your microphone there.
That's a man who's given up.
Yeah, I locked the door so no one will know. No one's ever going
to
know now.
That's right. No one. I'm glad you kept it to yourself.
Guys, it means a lot that you listen. It really does. Make sure that you go and subscribe to our YouTube channel. That really helps. Leave us a review anywhere that you can find a place to review where you listen to podcasts. Share it with a friend. Send us an email. Interact with us. We like interacting with you. And there's lots of exciting things continuing to come on the horizon. We'll see you next week on
Talk About That.
Finding uplifting news in today's headlines is often like searching for a needle in a haystack. At The Story Behind Podcast, we believe in the power of finding heartwarming tales and are happy to share empowering stories with you every week. Get inspired by the note a waitress received from a patron dining alone. And even hear about how one VIP passenger made a hardworking pilot get emotional before his flight. To start listening to The Story Behind Podcast, visit lifeaudio.com.